Hello, we couldn't help but wonder listeners. Seeing as we have a while before And Just Like That is back, Elise and I wanted to give you a listen to another project we've been working on. We couldn't help but wonder, still wondering. There we discuss New York City-based rom-coms like When Harry Met Sally, You've Got Mail, Hitch, Trainwreck, Bros, Serendipity, Ghosts. We cheat a little bit with Sleeps in Seattle, but also bonus episodes where we answer questions and do quick breakdowns of films like An Affair to Remember. We break them into 3 to 4 episodes, so the first episodes that we're going to share here are not spoiler at all. We hope you enjoy. Welcome to Still Wondering, Serendipity, Part 1. Hey, Elise Castle.
Hey, Mike Jensen.
I have to say, I know we kind of covered this in our little bonus material last week, but it's super exciting to be recording, like, now.
Oh,
we're in real time.
We're able to ask people, what should we do next? I'm really grateful that the strike coincided with our schedule, that they were like, all right, yes, you guys, we got to get this wrapped up. They're running out of movies to do.
We really appreciate all the work that Fran did to get us back in your podcast feed here. Because it's fun that, like, you know, part of the reason why we wanted to do this one right now, A, we needed to do another podcast, but B, like, we're heading into the holiday season. Like, it actually is December. And, you know, it was pointed out that only the first act of this film really is about the holidays, but it was fun watching this and watching a holiday-themed New York City.
Yeah, and also it's framed in the holidays. Like, it doesn't just start. We get there again at the end.
Yeah.
But also, I think I said this before too, almost every single rom-com takes place at the holidays. Like, when I notice this, I'm realizing that there are New York City rom-com things that happen in every film, and that's one of them, is that they do have their holiday moment. Really quick, but hold on. I'm mentioning this here because we've already recorded our final episode of We Couldn't Help But Wonder, but we lost a member of the Sex and the City fam.
We did, yes, just recently.
Yeah, Frances Sternhagen, a.k.a. Bunny.
And Sarah Jessica Parker on her Instagram had a really lovely picture and post that she did as well.
Yeah, I mean, she was... It's so, we always talk about this because we deal with a lot of older actresses. She was 93, I believe, when we cover these movies as well. And their careers, like, we know her as Bunny, but just take a moment and look over her career. I mean, the New York Times did a write-up. It's amazing. So we just wanted to mention that here.
Yeah. And then I should also add, you were talking about how every romantic comedy has a moment that takes place during the holiday season, as well as the Harry Potter series. Oh. It's funny, on like my HBO, it's like holiday movies for you to watch, and it like has all the Harry Potters. I'm like, well, I'm not sure if those are
right.
Really,
I don't really know if
films.
That's a, yeah, but okay. But
it
I
did
think
make me laugh though.
It is like cozy vibes, you know, and I think it's like cozy. It's abundant. It's, you know, there's a lot of food happening. That all just aligns with the holiday season.
Well, and they all
season.
Take, all of them, because they take place over the school year, so they all do have a scene that has to do with the holiday season. So I do get, I just think it's funny.
Yeah, and that music is very holidaysy.
Holidaysy.
So I'm just wondering, do we just start this off with our serendipity stories?
I don't know. Do I have a serendipity story?
Do we have a serendipity story?
Oh, you meant like in our lives, like
no,
serendipitous
no, no, no,
moments.
No, 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 no,
no. No, let's save that for the end.
Okay, I was like, Mike.
And in fact, let's see how this goes, and if we go long, maybe we'll save the good one for a bonus episode.
I don't know if it's going to be a whole bonus episode.
Actually, like a moment.
Oh, okay.
So we are here today to discuss Serendipity. This was directed by Peter Chelsom. He's from Blackpool in Northern England, and in fact, as always, I have watched the film. I have watched the film with commentary, I have watched the behind the scenes, and then I have watched the film again. And if you ever get a chance to hear the commentary, he will mention that he's from Blackpool several times. You know, he had had some success with a very small film called Hear My Song, and then went on to do a film called Funny Bones, The Mighty. He did a movie called Town and Country that came out this same year. And what I really want is a documentary on that film, because repeatedly he says, after doing Town and Country, this movie was a lovely experience. So I have a feeling that there was some drama with that one. And in fact, pieces of that film will find their way into this one. It was written by Mark Klein. This is his very first produced screenplay. He was born in New York City and raised in New Jersey. And in 1997, he sold a screenplay called Love, Jenny, which was meant to be made starring Will Smith and Jada Pinkett, who at the time did not have Smith in her last name. And it was never made. But because of the sale, he made enough money that he was able to exclusively go to work on his next screenplay. So like I said, I watched all the stuff, and one of the behind-the-scenes featurettes begins with this. 94% of all people think they have a soulmate out there. So that's not part of the film itself, but I thought it was an interesting way that this featurette started. And the way the film starts is with some time-lapse clouds and the New York skyline. This is clearly not actually the roof of Bloomingdale's where we're going to end up. There's no clock on the roof of Bloomingdale's, mm-hmm. but I get what they're doing. That we're putting in the sense of time right away. And then from the music and the snow, it's clearly the holidays. And I was going to make the choice to not talk about the opening credits. I was going to be like, we don't have to comment as the credits come on. But there's just kind of no way to ignore the fact that Bridget Moynihan and John Corbett are on the same credit page.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote that it opens with Cool Yule. I think this is Louis Armstrong. It sounds like Louis Armstrong.
It is. I was going to go into my Louis Armstrong, but I'll hold.
And we get, and I love this song. Bette Midler has a Christmas album called Cool Yule, and she performs this song, and it's just really fun. We get the opening credits. I just wrote, love Molly Shannon, love Eugene Levy. Oh, Natasha and Aiden on the same screen.
I know, it's so funny. I mean, they had both already done? I don't know. Like, I feel like that can't be a coincidence. Maybe it is, but it feels like an inside joke to me.
So when was this exactly released?
So this was filmed, because once again, this is all this winter stuff. Mm-hmm. It was filmed actually in late July, early August of 2000. And then it was released in the fall of 2001.
And it was released after September 11th, 2001. And I do recall reading that both Kate Beckinsale and John Cusack were apprehensive about releasing this and talking about this because there was kind of that energy of, I don't know what to do in this moment.
Correct. Yeah. And that definitely does play a role. But, you know, we'll get to that as we get to the end.
Oh, okay.
And then also just because music by Alan Silvestri popped up and, you know, he did the score to one of my favorite films, maybe my favorite movie, Contact. But he also did the music for both the film and the Broadway adaptation of Back to the Future. And I think our friend Annabelle might still have a bottle of wine from his vineyard in her apartment.
Look at all that. I didn't know any of that. So that's very fun.
Yeah. And we're at Bloomingdale's.
Yeah, we're outside of Bloomingdale's. We see someone folding sweaters and gloves in the upstairs, which looks like she may be packaging gifts or restocking things, but those gloves do not belong there. We see a full conversation about these gloves and they cannot go there. She hands them off to someone else. Then we see a man coming out of Bloomingdale's with two babies and packages.
Yes.
The baby is crying, but he has the pacifier in his mouth. Why doesn't he put it in the baby's mouth that it's crying?
I always have thoughts with kids like these because they don't know they're acting. They think some strange guy is carrying them away.
Unless they do know they're acting and they're geniuses. And then we see these elusive gloves being transported via basket. And I said, finally, those gloves make it to the rack and everyone needs them.
Yeah, the gloves are back. I will say there are a lot of fade cuts, which is fine. It's kind of a trick of instead of there being, I just always think that like if Zemeckis had made this film, it would have actually been one continuous take.
Who's Zemeckis?
Robert Zemeckis directed Contact and he's okay. A big fan of the long take. Like he has, like in the movie Contact, there's like the moment where the camera starts outside the house and it actually appears to go through a pane of glass into the house and down the hall. Mm. So this is sort of done through trickery, which is fine. Like I swear I'm not being shady. It's just like, if you watch closely, you can see that like one wall fades to another wall, which fades to another wall and then fades to the front doors. And as we follow the gloves, we get a few years ago. Now, here's something that is especially going to be touched upon as in the beginning of this film. Originally, this said 10 years ago. And it was changed later on when they decided that they wanted to shorten the amount of time between the first act and the rest of the film. And in fact, all of these opening scenes have alternate versions because they were shot with slightly different script and slightly different intent. And after some screenings of the film had been done, the decision was made to go back and refilm all three of these opening scenes. And I'll talk about it as we go through and the reasoning behind that. So yes, as I said, all this winter stuff was shot in late July, early August of the year 2000. If you're a fan of this film, I highly recommend getting the Blu-ray, because the Blu-ray has some amazing features, and one of them, and I love this and culled quite a bit from it, the director actually has his production journal on the DVD. Like, you can read through his journal, and he marks, like, day one, day two, day three. So I get a lot of fun stuff from that as well. But yes, as you say, everyone suddenly wants these gloves. We have two different hands reaching for it. And this is where we see John Cusack and Kate Beckinsale. And so I will say, John Cusack at this point was probably best known for his 80s movies like Better Off Dead and Say Anything. He had done Gross Point Blank in 97, and High Fidelity came out in the year 2000. And he says that he only agreed to do this film because of the casting of Kate Beckinsale. And now, Kate Beckinsale is a British actress who I first saw in the Kenneth Branagh, Emma Thompson starring Much Ado About Nothing. She'd done a TV movie version of Emma as Emma, and I remember the last days of disco being a thing. And I'd seen Broke Down Palace, another film that she had made. And then Pearl Harbor would come out this exact same year. In fact, we'll get to it, but she literally came to this set from the set of filming Pearl Harbor with no time, like, literally had been in Hawaii and the next day was in New York filming this movie.
And something interesting is that John Cusack and Kate Beckinsale haven't really stayed in touch since this movie. So I just find it interesting that he only wanted to do this film because of her. And I read this online, and it doesn't sound like there's any bad blood between them. It just sounds like John Cusack lives his kind of quiet life, and they just haven't remained friends.
Oh, here's the thing that I might cut. I might not leave this in, but I've always had a little bit of, like, a cloud over Kate Beckinsale because this is, nobody tell anyone that I shared this. No, I'm kidding. It's totally an interview that you can find out there, that Claire Danes did an interview post Broke Down Palace, which I always want to call Brokeback Mountain,
yeah,
where she talked about how she was so excited to make a film with, like, a female her age. Because a lot of women will talk about, like, when you're on a set, you are usually the woman. Like, it's all guys behind the scenes, mostly mm-hmm. male actors. I love Laura Dern when she won her Emmy, being like, I've been in this business for 40 years and I've worked with three actresses. That Claire Danes was really excited to make a movie with, like, a peer, like a mm-hmm. female her age. And then Kate Beckinsale wouldn't talk to her. Like, the entire filming process, like, wouldn't have a conversation with her. And I don't know her process. Maybe that's just what her thing is. But I've always had a little bit of, like, are you mean?
Well, the same thing I read also said that her and Molly Shannon have remained very close. So
interesting.
Yeah, so I don't know anything. She made it seem. This article I read just made it seem that John Cusack kind of just keeps to himself as a person.
Gotcha.
Like, it didn't make it seem like they were mad at each other. I just, when you said he wanted to do this because of her, it made me think that maybe they were friends beforehand.
I think that he just admired her work. I think that she was, like, an up-and-coming actress. But this is another thing that I love. So this is from the IMDb page, from the trivia. So I'm pulling this right from that. But they were talking about during filming of the movie in NYC, the following note was posted on a production trailer. Yes, we are filming a movie. It's called Serendipity. It stars John Cusack and some girl from Britain that you wouldn't know even if we told you her name. We will be shooting tonight until mid-morning. Please don't ask the crew any questions. Even if they don't look like they are working, they are thinking. I enjoy it.
Was Kate Beckinsale really not known, or were they just being funny?
Well, like I said, she'd done mostly British work.
Okay.
Last Days in Disco had come out just a few years before this, but I don't think it had been, like, a hit. And I think that was kind of her first American thing. And Peter Chisholm talks about how the role was not written for a British person. Like, it was written for an American. And so they did have to change things when she came along, because he didn't want her to have to think about an American accent.
Okay.
He wanted her to be, like, as free as possible to just, like, play the character. So I do think this was certainly towards the beginning of her being known by American audiences. And so, yeah, they both reach for the glove and they apologize, but each say the other can have it and then ask the nearby employee if there's another pair.
They ask the employee, who just says whatever is out, and then another man comes up and snatches the gloves. And I was just thinking that these gloves are the Tickle Me Elmo of serendipity. Everyone needs a pair of black cashmere gloves.
And so this was originally shot with a different sales lady. And it also, in the other version, several things are different. For one thing, there are other dark colored gloves on this display. Now, I looked really close and maybe they're, like, a dark purple, but when they refilm it, it's very stark. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very much, there's only one pair of gloves that looks anything like this, which I think was a good decision to have made. It also was felt that the store wasn't crowded enough, and that is true. In the original version, which was not filmed at the real Bloomingdale's. It was filmed in Toronto. So this film was partly filmed in New York City and partly filmed in Toronto. And I'll try to point out when those are different, when those locations are in different locations. And it also, it does, the director describes it as a little too arch, that they're both a little bit like too on guard. They're both a little bit defensive. Part of it he felt was that because it had been towards the beginning of filming, they just didn't know each other as well. So they were both a little bit, they weren't quite as warm with each other. And she specifically states that she's buying the gloves for herself in the original scene, which is why she should get them, because his girlfriend will never know what she's missing, but she will. Okay, and here's the other thing. So you were talking about how they asked the sales lady if there's another pair, and the sales lady says there's no storeroom or a basement or even an attic. Okay, so this is Anne Talman, and I only bring this up because she played Elizabeth Taylor's daughter on Broadway in The Little Foxes in 1981 when she was 22 years old. And she talks about how there's this whole thing where she's on the news talking about how Elizabeth Taylor made everyone sign
NDA.
Thank you very much. Except for her, that she never had to sign one. And she now does a one-woman show where she plays Elizabeth Taylor and kind of like shares the stories of working with her. So she was in The Women on Broadway, which I totally saw. That was the Cynthia Nixon one. And here's the other thing. She was in that production of The House of Blue Leaves, that one that John Mahoney and Danny Aiello was in.
Oh.
That from like Moonstruck that we talked about. Now, I don't know if they were all in the cast at the same time. I don't know if, you know, but like, I just thought it was so funny. So he tells her to take the gloves and insists, but he hangs them back up, which proves to be a bad move. Because yes, this guy comes along to take them. This is, once again, this was all part of the reshoot. This was not in the original scene.
Yeah, so then they invent this outrageous story to tell the guy that they need the gloves. And it's just, it's a very strange, slightly transphobic.
Yeah, the one they land on is not great. Yeah, it's clearly them kind of making things up. And so here's another thing about this guy. So in my original notes, I wrote, I think this is, and I put a person's name because I couldn't, like, if you look in IMDb, there's no picture for this person. So I was like, I must be this person. But I'm like, I know this guy. Like, this guy is so familiar to me. And yeah, this is Buck Henry. And I'm so glad that in the commentary, the director is like, yeah, this is Buck Henry. I'm like, yeah, of course. So this is, he's uncredited in the film. He's not even in the closing credits on the DVD. This guy wrote The Graduate. He wrote The Owl and the Pussycat. He wrote What's Up, Doc. He wrote To Die For. He created the series Get Smart. He was in Town and Country, which is the film that this director had done previously. And he was, most importantly, he was Liz Lemon's dad on 30 Rock. I'm like, why do I know this person?
Why does he have, like, why is he doing this?
I assume that because it was part, so I do have some questions for, like, the production company, because if you go and watch the trailer for this film, first of all, it has that song that's that, like, let go your hair, let go your heart.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, that is such a perfect.
Yeah.
And it has the original versions of these scenes. Like, there are quotes that are not in the film. So I don't know if just, like, they'd already sent out the credits and they were like, yep, this is who's in it. But the sales lady is credited correctly, so I don't know. I don't know if the director just called up Buck Henry and was like, hey, man, we're doing some reshoots. Can you come and play this little role? There's a bit of mystery to it. But yeah, that's who this is.
It's also interesting, even the promotional materials are very, they look like I may have made some of them.
They also totally spoil the end. And I get that, like, no one's confused as to whether or not these two are going to get together in the end.
Yeah.
But they totally show the last scene of the film in the trailer.
Yeah, it's just, it's very, like, all of the, everything, even the opening credits of the film look like I made it on Microsoft Word.
Yeah, I do think that it was definitely on a budget. And I think that New York probably ate up a lot of that budget. I do like that she seems sort of amused by the guy being sort of a dick. But anyways, in the end, they get the gloves and she doesn't know how to thank him.
Yeah, John gives Kate the gloves to buy herself. We don't know their names yet, so that's why, and that's actually part of the story, so that's why I'm referring to them as John and Kate plus 8.
Yes.
And this is the meet cute. This is it. Like,
sure.
It happens really early.
Yeah.
And now they go to Serendipity, which is a restaurant on East 60th Street. I always thought it was called Serendipity 3 because there were two others in the city.
100%. I did so much research trying to find the other two Serendipities.
Because there's a restaurant in New York City called Alice's Teacup. Well, there used to be more of them. There might only be one or two now. And they used to have, like, Alice's Teacup Chapter 1, Chapter 2. And it's also a similar whimsy type place. So I thought there was serendipity 1 and 2, but there's not. And do you know why, Mike?
I do, but do you want to say why?
You can, because I don't have it right in front of me.
Well, it's named after the 3 legendary princes of Serendip, which is now Sri Lanka. So that's my understanding, is that they have the 3 to honor the 3 princes.
Yeah.
So a couple of things. In the original version, there is a moment when she says, I don't know how to thank you, that he says, well, buy me a cup of coffee and they're yours. So that's what was sort of going to sort of like lead them to go do something together. And yeah, it makes sense also because this is right next to Bloomingdale's. These are very close to each other. Oh, also, Serendipity is partly now owned by Selena Gomez.
Oh,
just FYI.
Yeah, and it is still there, and they are there drinking frozen hot chocolate, which is one of Serendipity's signature things to get. And that table that they're sitting at, because of this film, is now called the Star Table.
So also, in addition, there was originally an entire scene that happened between them leaving Bloomingdale's and sitting down at Serendipity. And I'll try to go through it kind of quickly, because I think it's interesting, but obviously, you know, you haven't seen it. So they're standing in line to go in, and she asked him, have you ever been cubed? And explains that it's an ancient Sophie game. And he has a comment of like, I've never met any ancient Sophie. So the correct answer is no. Which I also think the correct answer is a recurring thing with his character.
Imagine a desert.
Desert. Right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Desert. Lots of sand. Got it.
Now in the desert, imagine a cube.
What does it look like?
No, that's what you've got to tell me. How big is it?
Pretty big. About the size of a mid-sized U-Haul truck.
Okay. And what's it made of?
Steel.
And is it lying flat in the sand, or is it in some other position?
Flat in the sand.
Now, in the same desert, imagine a ladder.
A ladder.
Yeah.
Right.
What's it made of? Don't think about it. Just say the first thing that pops into your head.
You have beautiful eyes.
Second thing that pops into your head.
You have beautiful eyes.
Come on now, stop it. Be serious.
And I believe that moment's in the trailer, even though it's not in the final film. Mm. And the director does say that he is sad that they lost that, because he likes that moment. But she tells him to be serious. He says his ladder is made of wood. In position to the cube, it's leaning against it. And then she says, imagine a horse in the same desert. And what does it look like? And he says it's a pony. And now horses and ponies, I'm told, are not the same thing.
They're not.
I still don't really understand it, but that is what I've been told.
Ponies are not baby horses. I found this out too late in life.
And then when he says it's a pony, she kind of laughs and then apologizes because it's essential to remain indifferent. And where is the pony in relation to the cube? And he says it's way in the background, almost disappearing off the horizon. And she says, well, that's it. You've been cubed. But she won't say what it means. And in both versions, they're now ushered in by a host played by Stephen Bruce, who is one of the original founders of Serendipity.
Thank you, Mike.
There you go. And we have the 3 princes, which I'm assuming is meant to represent the 3 princes of Serendip. Okay, sorry. So here's another original scene. In the original scene, we see a little kid in a devil costume, which he will come back later in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have John insisting that he wants to know what cubing means. And it's revealed that the cube is your own subconscious view of yourself. And that big means he has an inflated ego. He had said it was made of steel, which reinforces the idea that he thinks he's invincible. But that because he said it was flat on the ground, it means he's down to earth. The ladder represents your friends, and wood means that he likes different kinds of people from himself. And horse is your current lover. And a pony is cute and unthreatening and also disappearing off the horizon. Now, this reshoot is the actual Serendipity. It's funny how you kind of can't tell when it's the real Serendipity and when it's not. I'll try to point out some moments when I know that it's one or the other. But anyways, all right, let's get back to the film that you got to watch.
Well, basically they're at Serendipity drinking frozen hot chocolate. She's gonna pay the bill because he let her buy the gloves that were for his girlfriend. It just felt weird to me. That's like, you let me buy these gloves, so I'm also gonna pay the bill. This all feels a bit romantic for 2 strangers that just met. I don't know. She loves the name Serendipity, which means fortunate accident. And I thought, they're really giving a lot away in these first 10 minutes. Like, they're really just letting us know everything that's happening. I'm still a little confused as to why they're together, since we find out that they are both partnered, because she thinks fate is behind everything. We find out his name is Jonathan. Jonathan and the gloves. He runs into a beautiful, attractive lady with a boyfriend. And you have the glove lady get a room. Like, this is just all of my notes that I'm thinking while I'm here.
You don't know that story? It's an old folktale classic. Our hero, Jonathan, goes out in search of black gloves. And in a perfect act of serendipiosity or serendipitousness, he runs into a beautiful, attractive English girl with a boyfriend.
He definitely, like, uses some interesting forms of serendipity. And yeah, you know, you have a boyfriend, right? And you have a glove lady.
Right, and that just made me laugh because I'm just thinking of that meme where it's like, what do you say about me when I'm not there? I call you the glove lady. I don't know.
So then this next scene was also reshot as they're leaving. This whole thing of them leaving the restaurant to her getting into a cab was a completely different version of the scene. The exact same setups, exact same blocking, but the final version is much more relaxed. In the original ending, it's him sort of chasing her out because she won't say her name. And he's almost like yelling, like, why won't you tell me your name? And in this version, it's, I hope you enjoy the gloves you bought yourself, and him saying that he wants golf clubs for Christmas. And he's kind of forward, and it's interesting, his whole thing of like...
So you're gonna meet your boyfriend now, or what?
No, I think he's probably out doing what you're doing.
Getting a crush on someone else's girlfriend?
I just said, come on, Jonathan. He asked for her number. She says if they were supposed to meet again, they will. It's just not time. And then she kisses him on the cheek and gets in a cab.
Well, she says, Merry Christmas, and he says, that's it? And I will say that the scene originally had a bit different of an ending.
Do you see what I mean? If I was to give you my name, it would be like cheating.
No, not my cheating, because I'm going to dump my pony anyway. She's off the horizon.
I don't mean cheating on your girlfriend. I mean cheating fate.
Cheating fate?
But I think everything happens for a reason.
Do you want to know why I'm standing here with you right now, right this second?
All right, give me your theory.
I missed my movie. I went to Bloomingdale's. I saw a pair of gloves. I met you. I got lucky. I got very lucky.
But it's so uninspiring that
Come on, you're not going to leave. I don't get this.
That's because you have no faith.
Faith in what?
It was thought to once again be just a little too much. But I do feel like if we haven't already established, we will establish that he is less serious in his relationship than she is in hers.
Okay, yeah, I guess that's it. And also, though, they're both in relationships, and I don't know. My whole thoughts on this are that if you are this strongly attracted to someone that's not your partner, that it's ruining every aspect and you're screaming down the streets of New York City, maybe you should rethink your relationship. And we'll get there, but there was just so much of, this is a lot. And then he kicks a snowball in front of Betsy Johnson, which is no longer there. It is now an Italian lighting shop. There are a lot of furniture and design shops in this neighborhood, by the way.
Yeah, and that was an improv. He just sort of kicked that snow and then apologized to nobody. Like, it was just sort of a thing that he did on the set. And I will say that as he goes down to the subway, there's a poster for John Guare's 6 Degrees of Separation.
Right.
Not for nothing, this is the same author as The House of Blue Leaves. And I wrote, wait, why is this sign up? This closed in 1993.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, right, it's several years ago.
Oh! Thank you.
Because I was so thrown until I was like, oh, it actually is really good. It's really good set design because this is supposed to be in the early 90s.
Okay, that makes sense. I get it. Because I wrote, there's an ad for 6 Degrees of Separation above the subway entrance at 59th and Lex, which closed on Broadway in 92, but it did have a revival in 2017.
Yeah, so that's what it is. It's actually very clever. It just, neither of us got it on our own.
Yeah.
And as he goes down to the subway, we see him sort of feel his throat and notice something. And I was like, oh, I guess he left his scarf.
So he goes back to Serendipity to get his scarf. And Kate is there because she forgot the gloves. And then they just... let's go do something.
And we go to Woolman Rink.
Yeah, I wrote, I'm stressed. Like, this part stresses me out. This movie kind of stressed me out in a lot of ways, but I was just a little stressed because, you know, I don't want them to, like, I just feel bad for their boyfriend and girlfriend that are at home. Even if they don't like them, this isn't nice. This wouldn't make anyone feel good to know that their boyfriend or girlfriend is having a magical New York experience with someone else. That's all.
And it's very circular here. Like, I do think that this has been remodeled a little bit. And I will say this took place over the course of 3 days of shooting, and there were 400 extras involved. And of course, because this is the middle of the summer, this is all fake ice.
Have you ever ice skated there?
Oh yeah, I have a couple of times actually. My very first date, quote unquote, with my ex was skating at Woolman Rink. He brought his sister, who did not approve of him dating a guy. So that was romantic.
Very like serendipity.
Yeah, almost exactly the same. Well, to the extent that, like, we will see here that they, as actors, have different level of skating prowess, that John Cusack is not a very good ice skater, whereas Kate Beckinsale was actually fairly good and could, like, turn and go backwards. And I also can ice skate and turn and go backwards and then turn around and go forward again. The guy I was seeing at the time attempted this, and I didn't know where he had gone until I realized that he had fallen and smacked his face on the ice and broken out two teeth.
Oh, so gosh,
that's how our first date ended.
I don't like it.
Yeah, it was pretty upsetting. It's pretty bad. I have the memory of like going back to my apartment and saying, well, I'm just never going on a date ever again. We did date for 2 years after that, so it turned out okay.
I have only been ice skating once, and I didn't like it, and I'll never go again. It's not very fun. So they're ice skating, and he says, please don't tell me you're only here for a week. And again, I am mad. I said, you both are partnered. I hope his girlfriend shows up to push him over.
Yeah, but we don't know. Like, maybe they've been dating these people for, I don't know. I feel like I don't take this quite as seriously because they're not married. They're not engaged. We'll get there when we get there. But for me, I just kind of thought like, I don't know. I don't know the state of their relationships. Maybe it's super cat. Maybe they just started dating them a couple weeks ago. Like, I don't know. It didn't bother me as much.
I'm being very Mike right now.
You are being very me right now. Listen, we'll get there. We're going to get to me rediscovering why I wasn't a huge fan of this film. Because even as we chose this, I was like, I feel like I didn't love this movie. Well, we'll get there.
I do like this movie, by the way. This is my third time watching it. And I've seen this two other times before, which is a lot for me to see a movie.
I will say that the night they were supposed to shoot this, they found West Nile virus on a dead bird and had to spray the entire park. So they filmed a later scene instead. We'll get to that one when we get to it. And they did talk about having to alter some lights in the background so you couldn't see the trees. Because once again, this wasn't winter. The trees were fully green. And in fact, there is a moment that there's a wide shot. You can kind of see the green trees off to the right-hand side. And yeah, she won't tell him her name, but will tell him she misses her mom terribly. And now we get into a series of questions as far as like favorite movie, and he once again uses the phrase "the correct answer is," which I think is an interesting thing about his personality.
Well, it is Cool Hand Luke,
and she's never seen
which it. I've never seen it either.
And favorite New York moment, this one's climbing the charts.
Yeah, favorite sexual position, and I wrote, and then she falls because she is being punished by the universe for being rude.
It's funny that you took this so much more seriously than I did, because for me, I was like, I feel like she at this point knows that he's not that serious about his girlfriend.
Well, I guess in this moment, I don't know. I think I was just angry watching this. I had also just had a Okay, I'll explain all of this, actually. Now it's all making sense. I had just had a conversation with my friend on the phone who we were talking about how men are dumb. And not all men, but that oftentimes straight men, like, they will reach out to women when their partners are not around. And she had been experiencing this with like this guy that she had met once 15 years ago, who is now just like texting her all the time and is just trying to get attention from her. And he has a wife and he only texts her at like 11:30 at night when family time is over. And so then she will respond to him like at prime family hours just to hopefully get him in trouble. But it's just, I think it was after that conversation. And then I saw this, so I was getting mad.
And yeah, so she falls and it is kind of funny. We have like a deep gash and she says gaping. And they do talk about behind the scenes that both John Cusack and Kate Beckinsale have kind of like dirty sense of humor. And that a lot of the filming of this was just them sort of ad-libbing, because a lot of it is them not, you can't hear what they're saying, they're just ice skating.
Oh, so I wasn't the perv when I was hearing him be like, you have a deep
gash. I think it was purposefully dirty. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And it's also funny behind the scenes that you hear the director being like, nuns get closer to the leads, nuns, and then like polar bear please get closer. Like the direction behind the scenes is pretty funny. Yeah, no, I think that it is decidedly kind of dirty.
All right.
And they decide to fix it with a band-aid.
Yeah, he patches it up and is now stroking her freckles. He can see Cassiopeia in them. Now he is drawing on her arm and telling her a story of Cassiopeia. And I'm just thinking she's going to go home to her boyfriend with wet hair, a busted arm, and a fake tattoo and be like, oh, just buying gloves.
Yeah. And it wasn't her arm being drawn on, for the record. I mean, you know, in the movie, obviously it is, but in reality, it wasn't. And if you watch this for a fourth time, on her close-ups, it is funny how the lighting is different than the other shots, and it's because the sun was coming up. They had spent all night in Central Park filming this, and by the time they got to her close-up, like, dawn was happening. And yeah, we have a moment where he kisses her arm, and all right. And then we get to her writing something down and saying she can't believe that she's doing it. And she's writing down her name and number.
Yeah, outside of Sushia on 28 West 56th Street, which is now Dim Sum Palace.
Nice.
Yeah, and it blows away. She won't write it again.
Because that was a sign.
It was a sign, and fate is telling them to back off. But then she has an idea.
Yeah, so she takes out a $5 bill and has him write his name and number on it. And for the record, this is the director writing. This is Peter Chisholm, like, wrote this on the dollar bill. It's his handwriting. 555-1798, maybe? I couldn't quite read it.
Yeah, well, it was 555, so I knew it wasn't a real number, so I just right. didn't pay attention. And his name is Jonathan Traeger. She then takes it to the newsstand to buy some mints and gets change, but she kind of eats a mint very sexily at the newsstand guy.
I thought she was just being sassy.
Oh, I thought she was trying to, like, get him in on her group of men that she's going to entice whilst she is partnered.
At least thinks she's a slut.
No, I'm not. We are not here. I'm not shaming her. I was just mad at the situation because I was mostly mad at this random person I've never met before who was sending messages to my friend.
So there was originally another scene here in between this and the next. There was a scene that was a little bit different where they, honestly, they stare at each other for like 3 hours. Like it goes on for so long of them just staring at each other in front of a fake sunset. And then they very lightly kissed to the extent that I had to rewind to be like, are they kissing? Like it's so light. And it was very much debated behind the scenes, like, should they have done this? Should they have not? It was thought bolder to not have them kiss, and I'm glad that they went. I'm glad that they cut the scene out to have them not have that moment.
Well, I think it's, yeah, I agree, because with what they did, there was no cheating involved, and right. so they don't have to tell their partners. I mean, I'm not saying, like, what you do and do have to disclose in a relationship. I'm just saying that they wouldn't have to go home and be like, oh, I just cheated.
Hey, this thing happened, right. Yeah.
However, arguably, I think most people would say that what they did is more hurtful than just, like, accidentally kissing someone drunk at a bar. Like, having a full, romantic, beautiful New York holiday evening. So she says that if the bill makes it back into her hands, then it was fate. Jonathan is over there like, what about me? And she decides she will write her name and number in the book, Love in the Time of Cholera, and sell it to a used bookstore. And then if he sees it, it's fate.
Yeah, and his comment of like, that's a lot of tubas was an improv for the record. And I actually have read Love in the Time of Cholera.
So Love in the Time of Cholera explores love sickness as an actual disease. And something I read on the internet a few times is like on Reddit and various things when I was researching is that John Cusack mentions that book in High Fidelity.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's why they did it, but.
And there's an episode of The Simpsons where Lisa Simpson is reading Love in the Time of Coloring Books.
Oh. Yeah, and he yells, you can't have the best time of your life with someone who isn't your girlfriend and leave it to fate.
So here is where I wrote, I'm now seriously worried about his relationship.
Right. And yeah, so I think you're right. I think that she, either he's more smarmy than her, or she's just in a more committed relationship.
And we kind of get to that. Like, we will get to a mention that he tends to go from relationship to relationship. So I think that's what it is. I think that she's in a much more committed relationship than him. Which is why it's more him pressuring and more her saying, like, if it was meant to be, we wouldn't have met each other right now.
But let's just extend our beautiful New York evening.
Let's give it a try. Let's go to the Waldorf Astoria.
And let's get a room, JK.
Well, I like that. That was also his improv as well. Like, he made that up on the spot of, like, yeah, let's get a room.
And the Waldorf Astoria closed in 2017 for renovations. There was this, they were, like, selling everything that was in the Waldorf Astoria for a hot minute. But it will be open in 2025 at the earliest.
And I will say my best friend Vanya, when she was on her honeymoon in New York, her and her husband Adam stayed at the Waldorf Astoria. And they were there for, like, the great blackout of, what was that, 2004?
Yeah.
And because there was no power, so there was a bunch of Broadway shows they didn't get to see. And there was no subway. So I rollerbladed from my apartment up here in Harlem all the way down to the Waldorf Astoria. And we sort of spent the day like doing things that didn't require power. And we had to like walk up and down the stairs because obviously none of the elevators were working. And they'd come around and like given everyone a glow stick. So like that was how you like lit your way, was this like random glow stick.
Was she not living here at the time?
No. They were planning on moving to LA. And I kind of convinced them on that stay. I feel like I was like, just come to New York for a while. And
we don't have power.
This is how we live all the time. It's fun. And so her, so for the record, after 25 days of filming in New York City, this scene is the first thing they filmed in Toronto. So inside the Waldorf Astoria, we're no longer in New York anymore.
We are in Toronto.
We're in Toronto. It's so hard for me to not say the fascist state of Toronto, not because I have anything against it, but because that's how Madonna says it in the documentary Truth or Dare. So it's Madonna's words, not mine. I hear it's lovely there.
I've been. I saw Phantom of the Opera there.
Oh, nice. And she says that if they both randomly pick the same floor, they're supposed to be together now. And as the elevators are closing, she tosses him the bag and says her name is Sarah. And she chooses floor 23. And I wrote, he chooses 23 as well. Is this movie almost over? So there you go. For $4 a month, you get access to everything we've recorded, and we put out new material pretty much every week. You can find us on the Patreon app by searching We Couldn't Help But Wonder, the link on our Instagram, or through our website, wecouldn'thelpbutwonder.com. You'll also get instructions on how to receive the episodes wherever you already listen to podcasts. Hope you join us.
Oh yes, 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 oh yes. They both reach for the glove.
Did you count how many times you were supposed to say that?
No, I just actually got caught, and I was like, I think I'm supposed to stop now, but I can't.
Yeah,
I
have
to
commit
to the. I have to commit to the bit.
Serendipitously and serendipitiosis. I'm saying it wrong now.
Oh,
sorry. Did I not warm up properly? I'm not sure.
I don't know. Waldorf Astoria.
Astoria.
Waldorf Astoria for a hot minute. But it will be open.